Well, it is fair to say that countless authors, journalists and academics over the decades have all had a crack at retelling the dismissal. And with each year that goes by, more information has emerged about some of the key events leading up to November the 11th and who knew what and when. But what are the lessons to be learnt from these revelations? Well, joining me for a special panel today is Nikki Savage, journalist, author and former staffer to Prime Minister John Howard and Treasurer Peter Costello, and a board member here at Old Parliament House. Nikki, welcome to Radio National Breakfast.
Great to be here, 50 years later.
50 years later. David Solomon is a journalist, author, and served as press secretary for Gough Whitlam also in 1975. David, a very warm welcome to you.
Thank you very much.
And on the end of our panel, a bloke who's a little bit familiar to many of us, Kerry O'Brien, journalist and former host of the 7:30 Report, who was also a press secretary for Gough Whitlam in 1977. Kerry, lovely to have you here. Thank you.
Thank you, Sally.
Now, Nikki, I'll start with you. When it became clear that the Prime Minister had been dismissed, how would you describe the atmosphere here at Old Parliament House?
Absolutely chaotic. It's not that we weren't expecting a resolution of the crisis in some way. Obviously, that had to happen. I don't think anybody expected that it would happen on Remembrance Day. I mean, if you could pick any day, why this one? And Whitlam was going to Government House to suggest a half Senate election. And so there were people who were thinking that that would be one way of resolving the crisis, although, you know, how it would, I don't really know. So it came as a shock, not that we weren't expecting something to happen, but nothing that day, and nothing quite so dramatic. So it was chaotic, it was electric, it was exciting, and I think for many people, quite traumatic.
Was there any sense as a journalist on that day of what might happen next after that, what this might mean for the country, the dismissal?
Well, there were crowds gathering outside Parliament House. A lot of public servants had left their offices and come here. A lot of students had come here. They were very angry, agitated, but they weren't violent. So there was no sense at the time that this was going to blow up into something that was going to, you know, destroy society or really damage our democracy. Obviously, it did damage our democracy, but not in the way it would have happened if it had happened in some banana republic country, which we were becoming, I guess, where there would be blood on the streets and extensive violence. It didn't happen, which was a real blessing.
Nikki, I know you've got to go and jump on a panel inside shortly, so we'll let you go briefly and speak to David and Kerry. How should the dismissal be remembered politically in Australia?
Well, it should be remembered. I mean, one of the sad things about it is that so many young people don't even know that it happened. And I think they do need to be educated on that, to be warned about it, because the circumstances that enabled it to happen still exist. And although the characters who were involved at the time were pretty extraordinary, and you would not think that there would be that combination of people again who would be at the centre of it and who could make it happen. But anything is possible in politics, right? There's no reason why it can't happen again. So I think it's very important for people to remember what happened and how it happened and to be on guard against it, because I'm not so sure that our democracy would survive in as good a shape as it did after 75, given the kind of society we are today.
Nikki Savva, thank you so much for joining me. David Sullivan, you were a former press secretary for Gough Whitlam in 1975. How would you describe the level of turmoil on that day?
Extraordinary. We entered the day thinking it was all going to be resolved very neatly with, well, not so neatly, but be resolved anyway by the granting of a half-Senate election. The idea of the half-Senate election was that that would change the numbers in the Senate, not because most of the new senators wouldn't take their place until the middle of the following year, but some of them would take their place almost immediately, namely the senators for the territories and the replacements for the two senators who'd been replaced by non-Labor people by the premiers of New South Wales and Queensland. This was going to resolve the numbers, at least in the Senate, we all thought. Little did we know.
Kerry O'Brien, how important do you think it is when we're discussing the dismissal not to only focus on the events of the day on November the 11th, but to have a comprehensive understanding of the lead-up and the elements that were behind some of the decisions that were made on that day by various parties?
Sally, I think it's extraordinarily important, and people need to see this whole saga as a kind of jigsaw puzzle in which the pieces of the puzzle have really only been added, a lot of them have only been added after the events of the day. And had we been aware of what we know now on that day, the debate would certainly have been in some ways a very different debate, and some of those key players would have been painted in quite a different light. I mean, what we now know is that Sir John Kerr was quite fixated on the idea of his powers and the possibility of dismissing his Prime Minister a long time before that day, and certainly before it became a political crisis around the sacking of Rex Connor, which opposition leader Malcolm Fraser used as his ultimate excuse to say the circumstances are extraordinary enough for us to block supply, defer supply, that is not vote down supply, but defer it to try and force a general election. What we didn't know was that Sir John Kerr was having secret consultations with a number of senior constitutional lawyers on the quiet about what his powers were. He was having separate consultations secretly with a member of the High Court, Sir Anthony Mason, from August of 1975, about all of these issues, really quite detailed decisions. All of this revealed through Jenny Hocking's work, where she eventually got access to John Kerr's diaries and other material from the archives. We didn't know at the time that Anthony Mason had written, had provided on the 9th of November, I think it was, he might take issue with the words advice. But however you want to term it, he put down a set of views of his own, which really put on paper what they'd been discussing over time about whether or not Sir John Kerr had the right to dismiss, the power to dismiss. We were only finding out, I can't remember exactly when we discovered that Sir Garfield Barwick, the actual head of the High Court, had also, that Sir John Kerr had consulted him, and that they met on the 9th of November against the advice of his elected Prime Minister, who was commanding the numbers in the House of Representatives, the People's House. What Gough had maintained all along was that this was a political crisis, not a constitutional crisis, and it should be dealt with politically. It was a political crisis that came about when, you can argue till the cows come home about all of the circumstances leading up to it, But it came to a head around the political actions of Malcolm Fraser. And it was then cemented by the actions of Sir John Kerr, which became really a part of the political process. People behind the scenes were making political judgments about the issue of how long the opposition could maintain its position in the Senate. We now know that up to five Liberal senators were going to change their minds and allow supply through. I did a 10-year anniversary documentary for Four Corners in 1985,
And I interviewed Don Jessop, a Liberal Senator from South Australia, Alan Misson, a Liberal Senator from Victoria, both of whom confirmed, for the first time at that point, that they would have allowed supplied through if it had gone on any longer. Reg Withers has, the late Reg Withers, I think around 2014, it became, he had said that he'd confirmed that he didn't think he could hold the numbers for more than a week, that it might have only been a day before his support base in the Senate collapsed. All of these things were not known at the time. And what they led up to was a secret process taking place in part between Government House and the opposition leader's office, which I think was improper.
David Solomon, in which ways do you think the Whitlam government contributed to the situation that it found itself in the lead-up?
Oh, there were undoubtedly problems inside the government, particularly the loans affair. That kept changing as there were new public revelations about the existence of the loan, about the existence of the negotiations. There'd be another false step by a minister denying that they'd done something, that they were still negotiating, and resulting in the forced resignation of Connor. No, the problem with the loans affair stuck was with the government the whole time, and was the main reason that the government really was on the back foot for the last 3 or 4 months of the term.
Before the Whitlam government was voted in, it had been 23 years of Conservative government in Australia. What sort of effect had that had on the capabilities and the judgment of those who then found themselves in Gough Whitlam's ministry, having not had governing experience mostly?
Well, that was a problem. No one had been within cooey of government. Actually, the main effect was actually on the opposition rather than on the government. The opposition refused to concede to the government the power of government, that they were able to government, that Labor, they thought Labor should never be in government. The result was in the first half of the term in 1972, there were four double dissolution bills which resulted in the early election the following year. In the next half of a term, next 18 months, there were 21 bills rejected by the Senate. This was an indication of from the opposition that they did not think the Labor Party had the right to govern.
David, I'll never forget that Reg Withers actually declared very shortly after the 1972 election, when Labor was elected into office, he described the actions of voters as an act of insanity, and he took it as his responsibility as the opposition leader in the Senate to correct the situation. And that's exactly what he sought to do through process of obstruction after obstruction after obstruction through both terms of the Whitlam government. So there was this sense all the way through, as David says, that at no stage did the opposition consider that Whitlam actually had a right to govern, and that was manifested in so many ways.
Time has run out for us. It's an impossible question, Kerry. How would you describe the dismissal in a word?
It took me a long time to come to precisely this view, but I think when you put all of those pieces of the mosaic together, it was a coup.
David?
Kerr's attack on democracy. Kerr was committed to sacking Whitlam a long, long time before he actually did it. And the reason it was delayed was so that Kerr could get all of the backing from the palace and make sure that when he sacked the Whitlam government, he would not be sacked. That was his main concern.
Do you have confidence in democracy now?
Yes. We're here. Democracy's working very well in Australia.
Kerry?
Well,
I have less confidence than I used to have. I think Australia has some particular things which have helped us retain some strength in our democracy that some other countries don't have, like compulsory voting, for instance, like an electoral commission which has a strong element of integrity about it. But when you look at what is happening overseas and you look at some of the similarities that we share with countries like the United States and Britain and Europe and so on, and you look at what's happening there, we cannot for one minute take the arrogant assumption that we're okay.
Kerry O'Brien, journalist and author, thank you very much for joining me this morning. And David Solomon, journalist and press secretary to Gough Whitlam.